to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is dedicated to exploring human potentials, evolving human potentials in an evolving world. Each week I try to bring people to this program who are helping us shift the planet to a more conscious way of living, and tonight's guest is someone who is doing that in her work. She is a peace activist. She is a spiritual healer. Her name is Joan Roth, and she'll be talking to us about how to love ourselves. She'll be giving a workshop in New York, October, what is it, Joan, 17th?
20th? Okay, let me just see. It's the 17th through the 21st.
17th through the 21st in New York, and if people want to find out more about it, should they call your friend here in New York?
Yes, they should call I Ching Lee.
I Ching Lee. Do you have the number there? I might have.
Yes, Breath of Change, www.breathofchange.com,
right.
212-671-0979.
Great. So I'll be talking to Joan tonight. I should introduce myself. I'm Alan Steinfeld for New Realities, and I also do a cable television show in New York City and on the internet and on YouTube. You can look me up, Alan Steinfeld, and email me with comments at newrealities@earthlink.net. So, Joan, thank you. Thank you for just volunteering to talk and share your wisdom. I don't know that much about you, but when Yi Ching, our friend in common, talks about you, I get a really nice feeling. Mm-hmm. And I feel a sort of peace that somehow is associated with whatever you do.
Well, thank you. Well, God bless you for inviting me to share. And of course, Yi Ching is my angel. There are some people that you meet in the world that you know have come into your life for a very special reason, and I Ching is my angel, and I feel so blessed to be able to share our work together and to create the workshops that we do and the love that we have to share with others.
I bet some people feel that about you, though, also, that the fact that you've come into their life is a blessing. I mean, because of the sort of peace and the love. Your workshops are about how to love ourselves more.
Yes.
And is that the big problem that people have with themselves in the world, is that they're not loving themselves?
Well, yes. I mean, I really feel that right now the world is under tremendous amount of stress, and there are many world changes, and with the world changes, there are lifestyle and attitude changes. Everybody seems to be under a lot of pressure.
Yeah, and somehow the energy of the planet itself is amplifying that pressure.
Right, and because of this, everybody's working, overworking themselves, pushing themselves too fast, too hard, too furious.
Mm-hmm.
And I really see that it takes a great toll on our lives.
Huh.
And it affects us in a lot of negative ways.
Mm.
We're not getting enough rest. We're not looking at life and finding the beauty in it. We're not able to look at ourselves and find the goodness and the preciousness that we're here to share and explore.
Doesn't this always, I mean, is it any worse now than it's ever been? I mean, it seems like this is just the condition of the modern culture. And, you know, we've forgotten our connection to who we really are.
Yes.
So, or is it different? I mean, that is the thing. Or as many teachers, spiritual teachers say, there is something different about this time. There is an acceleration. There's a movement towards like an omega point.
The end times.
Is it? Is it really? Do you really get that?
I get it.
It's the end times, but the beginning of a new time.
To begin the new time, yes.
But it is the end times, huh?
And so we're all here to finish our business.
You mean, what is our business, though?
This is really the key, I believe, and that's why I'm working in this in this field of love, that loving yourself is your business. The most important business that you will ever do is this self-exploration, this getting connected to yourself and disconnecting from the criticism, the self-blame, all of the negatives that we do to ourselves. We live in a very critical environment. Everything is about doing it perfectly and being the best and overachieving and, you know, pushing beyond. And in doing that, we can lose a very beautiful part of ourselves, which is just being. Not doing, but being.
So, because we are that love, we are that peace. I mean, that is our essential nature.
Yes. But we are those innocent children that came to this earth to fulfill our destinies.
We are. So what happened, and how do we get back to that? I mean, it's not just about, okay, saying I'm going to love myself. There's actually some kind of physical
process.
Yeah. What is that process?
Well, I call it decompressing. And what I love about doing workshops is that we start at a point that the starting point is stop all criticism.
Stop all
criticism.
Yes.
That internal chatter that is just telling you what you have to be, what you have to do, where you have to go, how you have to do it, how you're doing it. You know, just that criticizing and analyzing and judging everything you do and everything everyone else does,
right,
that just perpetuates an intensity and a lack of joy in the soul, because you can never do enough, be enough, achieve enough.
Right.
When you're putting yourself under that pressure. So what I say to everyone when they walk through the door is, we're going to stop all criticism. We're going to quiet the chatter in our minds.
Mm. Okay, I get that. So that's something people could do on their own as well.
Absolutely.
So that's the first step, then.
Absolutely. But the thing that I realize is that, you know, we can do it by ourselves, but the big question is, immediately, why?
Well, yeah.
Why? Yeah. And that's what I do, is I will spend hours and hours lovingly telling you why.
Well, tell me why.
Why you should stop.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know why, because it just makes people happier, right? I mean,
well, you know, it is like decompressing. It's as if every moment of quiet, it becomes more and more precious.
Every moment of being quiet becomes
quietness. Yes.
Internal quietness.
Internal. When you really stop the ego, you know, and you begin to feel and you begin to think about what really matters.
Mm.
When and why you're so caught up in judgment.
Mm.
You know, the perfect example of this internal critic is that first thing you do if you are driving to work in the morning. You get in your car.
Uh-huh.
You hop in your car, you turn the engine on, and all of a sudden, you're a different person.
Right.
If you're a really loving person at home, say you're a loving father or mother, you get in the car and you've got to be at work at 9 o'clock, and you've got to get through all those lights to your place of business, and the people around you are doing the same thing, and everybody's rushing and beeping horns, and all of a sudden caring and love and everything that you created in your home is not operating in you, only this drive to get from point A to point B. And you start cutting people off.
I think that's the problem, is how we live in the world, in our modern culture, and it seems like we're really out of balance with how we're living here. And
yeah.
So in order to correct the personal self, we have to change the whole culture.
Well, that starts with each one of us.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
How do we start our culture, change our culture?
Yeah.
It begins with yourself.
So, So the first thing is just to be aware and notice and drop in and be quiet. Be quiet, you're saying.
Start to be quiet and start to catch yourself not caring about others around you. Start to see where it is that internal clock drives you to not care or love humanity.
Huh.
And who are we but a reflection every moment of the love that we have inside of us?
But what do you say about these politicians, George Bush, the people who are sending others to war to fight ridiculous cause? I mean, what do you say about the world like that?
You know, what's very interesting to me is I'm not hearing mothers speak out. I'm not seeing families getting together and walking the streets and banning others, getting others to join them to say, let's stop this war.
Uh-huh.
They're the movements that we need to have need to really happen, not just, you know, with one person speaking up, but mm-hmm. for all of us deciding to unite in different ways to talk about making peace happen. And how does peace happen? We have to start in our own homes.
Right. So the same failure to kind of be outspoken is the same thing that is stopping us from connecting with ourselves. This,
yes.
This lack of connection with our essence.
And it's our passion.
Yeah.
It's our passion. When we are not feeling peaceful at home, it's very hard to walk out the door and say, I fight for peace, I want peace, and we've got to stop the war. But inside, you're fighting with the people that live in your home with you.
Right.
You're fighting with the people at work. You're fighting on the way to work.
Right.
You're fighting to get here. You're fighting to get there. You're fighting to be heard. And you don't feel your power when you're fighting every minute.
That's true.
You can't possibly be in touch with who and what you really are if you haven't had the time to think about that and really be it.
So
fighting for it is not being it.
So then what is it that you're saying the first step is to be quiet?
The first step is to be quiet and find peace in your own heart and in your own home.
But, you know, people are addicted to the noise, to the busyness, to that. It's an addiction. It's an addiction that drives them. You know what I'm saying. You can tell people this. But they're going to have to want it. They have to want to know there's something different for them, and I think something has to take place before you get people there. It just seems that way, you know.
Well, I know for myself personally, I wanted to make a difference in the world years ago. I came up with a very amazing television network, and I wanted to figurehead it. And then I looked at myself and I said, how can I do this? If everything I believe and everything that I'm most passionate about, when I'm in my own home, I have chaos.
Uh-huh.
My children are having serious issues. I have two children diagnosed with ADD, ADHD.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, now that I've been through the whole process of this diagnosis, I realize it's not real.
Yeah.
But at that time, I was in the beginning of my process of learning about labeling and, you know, pigeonholing people and the school systems deciding who's who. And so I was in the beginning of this process, and I was very lost, and I was very overwhelmed. And I realized I can't be anything out in the world if I can't be a good mother that helps her children to thrive and succeed.
So that was the beginning of your spiritual awakening?
Well, I was spiritually awakening most of my life, but it became incredibly precious and important to me when I was blessed with these two children
uh-huh.
who were challenged. And I was at a loss where everything was new to me, and I had to figure out what to do to best support them. And I was in a lot of pain.
Right.
I felt I was blaming myself. I was criticizing myself. I believed that anything that was wrong with them most likely had to do with me and my...
Because you weren't loving yourself.
I didn't know how to love myself at that moment.
Uh-huh.
And then I had to find out how to love myself, because you cannot love your children, you cannot love your husband, your friends, without starting first with you.
So how did you, what was your process?
Well, failing miserably.
Okay. After you failed and realized you were a failure as a mother and loving yourself.
And judging myself way too harshly.
Yeah.
I realized I had to get out of this. I did some therapy, and I read a lot of incredible self-help books.
A big influence on you? What book would you say?
Okay, Dr. Christiane Northrup.
Oh, yeah.
Women's Bodies, Women's Wisdom.
Uh-huh.
My guidebook.
Okay.
She's my hero.
I saw her recently in New York. She's still out there. So, okay, you started to read a lot, get help, and then there was it must have been like a moment of revelation for you.
Yes, I had many life-defining moments.
Uh-huh.
One was my father, who I had been separated from for years. When we reconnected and had 2 years together, and then he had a tragic accident. And had a head injury, fell, and was in a coma for 18 months.
Wow.
During this period of time, I had a great awakening that I had some gifts available to me.
Okay. Like what? Your healing gift?
Yes, although at the time I didn't realize I had anything to do with his healing.
Uh-huh.
But what happened to me that was extraordinary was that I could hear him in his coma.
Hear him thinking?
Hear him speaking to me.
Telepathically?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, telepathically is not quite words. It's more of vibration and images and thoughts that come through. And when that first starts happening to you, it's hard to believe.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, what actually convinced you it was him? And, I mean, I believe it's possible, so you don't have to convince me, but what convinced you that it was him speaking and not your own mind making it up?
What happened was, there is, when you have a... He had a living will, and he, after a certain period of time, I forget how many days it was, it expires, and you have to go off life support.
Uh-huh.
And the hospital, all of the doctors, he had a team of specialists, all had concluded that, beyond a shadow of a doubt, all of his testing proved that he was completely brain damaged.
Uh-huh. And brain dead. He wasn't
brain
thinking.
Dead. Completely brain dead, yes.
Uh-huh.
And there would be no chance for him.
Uh-huh.
And all of the tests were conclusive, but I kept hearing him and feeling him.
What was he saying to you?
That he could hear everyone.
Uh-huh.
And that he was not brain dead, and that he needed my help.
But what convinced you it was his voice and not some desire of you? You just knew.
That was exactly my dilemma, because I didn't know. Especially at the hospital, they were having a social worker / psychologist that was trying to convince me that this was just, you know, my optimistic, you know, altruistic love for my father, and, you know, that I needed to let go.
You told these doctors that he was speaking to you.
Yes, and they had a very hard time with that.
Right.
And everyone did. My family all thought, everybody thought that I was a desperate daughter. You know.
But you knew for sure it was, you just knew it, right?
I knew that one thing I have always done is believed in my gut feeling about. When I have that feeling throughout my life, I know it's real,
and I
trust it. That's how I live.
That's so important, I think, for people to hear and to realize that gut feeling is truth. It's their soul speaking to them.
Right, and I have that. I always have had that connection since I was a child. That there are just some things that I know, but that knowingness transcends words, and it transcends anyone else's belief but my own.
So you knew and you trusted your knowing with your father, and so what was that process? What happened?
Well, I started crying and praying because my time was up with him.
Because they were going to take him off life support.
They were taking him off, and I was, my father was really sweet to me. And
your whole life, you mean?
Well, I didn't, because of some family issues, mother, and I had some serious family issues, my father had to give me up for a few years.
Right, and then you reconnected and you were with him, and then he had this thing happen.
Yeah, so there was just this joy of being together and then now being separated that was overwhelming for me.
Mm-hmm. How old were you when this?
I was in my 30s.
When he was in the hospital?
I was in my 30s.
So, okay, so.
No, older, 40s.
Okay, I don't know how old you are now, so it doesn't matter.
What happened was I went home the night before he was going to be taken off life support, and I cried, and I asked God to help me, and I surrendered. I absolutely remember surrendering and saying, you know, it's not about me, although I'm making it all about me and my need. It's about God's wish for my father, and if you want him to go home, and, you know, take him, and if you want me to help him, show me the way.
Uh-huh.
You know, I surrender completely to your will and your need. And that's when the next day big changes happened.
Like what?
Well, I went in, and the nurse was beside me, two of the nurses, and I was saying goodbye to him.
Because he was, even though you believed he was, they were going to do that, they were going to pull the plug.
Yeah, and I also realized that if he was to live, he would live without the support. He had a tracheostomy, he was attached to many things, but I also have that faith that, you know, when there's the will to live, you will live. And
right.
So, but I heard that I was to ask my father some questions, and I asked him some questions about my mother and his girlfriend. And when I did that, he started to cry. And at that moment, the nurses asked the doctors to come, and I asked him some more questions, and they saw he was having an emotional response, and that changed everything.
So you saved, you saved him, basically, because you followed that instinct that you had.
And with help.
Yeah.
I know that.
it's not help. You, but it's not, whatever it is.
Yes, I'm grateful to participate in helping, and that is my mission.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that after this happened, and I saw that I can ask, and we all can ask, and that there's someone listening, and that our prayers can be answered, not always the way that we wish they would be answered, and in the way that we think we need. But our prayers are answered in the way that, you know, destiny is to play out.
So then, just what happened then with your father? I'm just curious.
So what happened was my father ended up talking to me.
Out loud?
Out loud. But I didn't believe it because everyone had questioned me so much. And he luckily did it in front of the nurses so that I was able to be validated that he was speaking to me.
That same day?
That same week.
Oh.
That same week. And then we began an amazing journey of unorthodox healing
like
techniques that I created.
Like what kind? Tell me about the healing that you...
The situation in the hospitals is unless you are responding in the way that the hospital needs you to respond, they can't provide physical therapy for you.
Isn't that awful?
I understand that they have to have some kind of a response to invest with it. It is horrible in a way, but you can understand it. You know, once I was a part of the system, I do understand how all these systems work and that they only have a certain amount of funding and that...
That's the awful part.
Right,
is that
that's the hard part.
Well, that's the inhuman part. There's only, I mean, that, you know, should be changed right away. A limited funding for health. I mean, anyway, that's a whole other program.
That's a whole other program,
yes.
But I will say that I'm totally into empowering others to believe that they have this, and when they don't have money to provide hospital or medical care to the ones they love, they have the gifts in their own hands through their love and through their own power to do what they can to support the needs of their loved ones.
You mean like prayer and hands on healing? Is that what you mean?
Yes.
So, but with your father, so he, what happened there?
So, it's a really long story, but he did end up coming out of the coma. He ended up coming home to live. And
was he okay?
He was able to speak, and he was able to remember everything. The extraordinary thing, after being in a coma for 18 months, and they said that elderly people past 60 have a very hard time ever regaining any memory of their life, that mostly just younger people are able to do that. But my father was able to remember everything. He was a lawyer and a brilliant scholar and an avid reader, and he loved all his clients, and he wanted to help people even from his bedside. And he continued to practice bedside law until he no longer could.
So he lived a couple of years after that.
He lived 5 years. And the doctors predicted that he could have 5 years to live because he was crippled. The accident that he had severely damaged his nerves His nerves.
Yes.
And so we were able to help him to get some movement, range of movement, and to be able to sit up and to talk and to participate in a wheelchair. It was quite a journey, and it was very exciting, and it was just the greatest joy to be able to get my father back and get his memory back and to be able to share in 5 more years of life. He got to see his grandchildren grow up a little bit, and we all just...
So what did you then learn about love and about the nature of healing through that whole experience?
Well, I learned that love is healing, and that love is powerful beyond measure.
So it was your love for your father that helped him have the energy to live.
Oh yeah, I know that when you know someone loves you and is behind you and is there for you, anything can happen.
Mm, that's true. So that's part of then. It's not just loving ourselves. It's putting that love out there in the world to help heal others, because that empowers others. Love empowers people, is what you're saying.
Yes.
And that's the gift we have to share with each other.
And we have for ourselves. I mean, the other side of that is we don't always need someone else's love to heal ourselves.
Mm.
We can do it ourselves.
But do you think you have some facility to tap? It seems like it, because you've had spiritual experiences, a sort of openness in who you are, that you can tap into those realms and bring something through. It's a gift, a facility that other people may not be there where you are. Do you know what I'm saying?
You know, I never want to say that I limit anyone.
Yeah.
The one thing that in this journey I have discovered is that I believe anyone has abilities that I have, and even more so than myself. The only thing that limits me or you is the limitations we put on ourselves.
Mm, right. I have a teacher who said, don't argue for your limitations, because people will defend their limitations. But you're absolutely right. There's nothing limited about. I mean, look at the impossible things that have been done, right? Seemingly.
Yes.
But so we have to defy the logical of a mind that says, no, this is impossible. Like, do you know the story about that woman, Shelley Yates? She drowned, her and her son went into this big lake, and her son drowned, and she drowned, but somehow she was able to be rescued, but her son was dead for, like, or at least, like your father, he was really unconscious for, like, 3 days, and they were taking him off life support, and she just started to get in touch with these beings that started to talk to her and tell her exactly what to do in order to bring her child back. Mm-hmm. And she did that. She had people come in and give her child energy and just sit with this child. And for 3 days, different people were in this hospital room giving this child energy. And he came back to life. And he's normal, you know.
I love this.
Yeah. She started to really be in touch with these other dimensional beings and started the thing called Fire the Grid, which happened, I guess, over the summer, July 17th. There was a worldwide increase in vibration, and she said these beings told her and everyone who was listening to just tune in at a certain time that day and get this extra energy that was coming to the earth.
Beautiful. And it is. I really feel the energy. I've been experiencing a lot of changes in my body.
Like what? Because I can't sleep lately. It's just...
Well, sleeping is really hard, and there's like a burning sensation internal, like a heating from the inside out. And a lot of people are saying, oh, you're having menopause. You know, and I know it's not menopause. I'm not experiencing menopause. And then I started to hear about a lot of people having this. Burning from the inside out.
Burning from which part of your
body? Like a burning, like a heating up.
Yeah.
And you don't really sweat. You just feel like there's something thermal going on.
So what is it that's happening, do you feel, planetarily?
Energy changing, and energy is very powerful. And, you know,
but what are we becoming? What do you feel
stronger,
like?
Stronger.
Stronger.
And stronger and more, and people are opening up. I think you're going to see, you're going to be very surprised that people that you never would have imagined listening and participating in group healing and in investigating things that are not scientific of origin and, you know, understanding it, really, and participating in it.
It's then this is what well, I don't want to give it a label like the Aquarian Age, but it's a change in consciousness is actually really taking place.
Yes, this is a part of what has been prophesized.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're watching it happen. We're seeing the earth changes. We're seeing people changing. We're seeing the we're crashing right now.
What do you mean crashing?
We're crashing. Everything that we believed and saw to be real and true is not that anymore.
Like, what specifically do you mean?
Just look at our country. Right now.
Right.
The position that we're in, the feelings and the emotions that everyone is having about our president.
Right.
You know, it's very raw, and yet people can say extraordinary things about what they're experiencing with our government, but people have not been able to do anything about it.
Hmm.
And this is like the quiet before the storm.
What do you think the storm will look like?
People moving and being able to be more direct about what they want and need to happen in our government and the policies that need to be changed. People speaking up and taking action to make things happen.
Yeah.
I believe that, you know, our youth has not participated politically. And I see that, I feel that they are going to move into place and start really moving and shaking things and changing them because they have the responsibility of getting us out of a war they don't want to be in.
Right. Do you think 2012 is a significant time that many people are saying is?
I think time is not... I think there's a lot of shifting, and that we've been helped a lot. I don't think the exact timing it can be predicted because I just believe that we have a lot more help than we're aware of.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you, now, can you talk about some of the beings that maybe you've been in touch with, or if you have, and what that's... What are these... You know, we can go out there on this show if you've been in touch with these higher dimensional beings, or are they an aspect of us, or are there truly beings from other dimensions now coming to help lift the consciousness?
Well, I believe that, you know, as I was saying, we have been helped.
Right.
And I believe that, you know, we're not limited to just what we see in ourselves, that there... I feel the presence of other beings, and I see it, and I really think that it has a lot to do with our DNA, where our consciousness leads us.
Have you had direct contact with these beings come to you and say, "This is how you want you to work with us," or?
You know, I do have channeling that I've experienced, conversations from others and or from consciousness that is very different from ours, but loving and
right.
helpful. And a lot of predictions that I had heard from others I have happened. So I have great faith and belief that they exist and are among us.
So your own channelings, where you channel these beings?
I don't channel them. I have friends that are very gifted in channeling.
Uh-huh.
And at first for me, it seemed out there and extraordinary. And then the more I read and the more I've opened myself to understanding the limitations of the double helix and the 12-strand DNA, I really do see that as the heart opens, the consciousness opens, the soul opens, and the body and spirit function more completely.
And actually then we are able to function at a higher vibration.
And that's when our consciousness is able to commingle with others and be able to take, you know, for me, I only believe in taking the best, the best information, the for me, the most goodness-oriented.
Right.
I am only interested in the positive.
Right, because you, I mean, I think through all our experiences of all the lifetimes, we've had to do all those selfish acts to realize that they haven't gotten us anywhere.
Right. That,
and so I think we're all, or many of us, are at a stage now where we realize that our evolution is everyone's evolution. You know, it's the bodhisattva. You know, we're all one consciousness here. So we're here for each other and for ourselves as part of that.
Right, and I believe that there are other universes and entities that are much more advanced than we can comprehend, and that through their help, we're going to be able to make the shifts that we need.
But do you think it's going to be a really difficult... Many people have said there's going to be a really difficult time. Or is this it?
Well, you know, like you said in the beginning, hasn't it always been difficult?
Yeah.
This is a very challenging world that we live in.
Mm.
You know, secular world where we are living, you know, in cycles. And the most important thing to understand about life is that we are cycling constantly. For us, we gauge it by decades.
Mm.
And as long as you are aware of what decade you're in and, you know, you're open to the fact that you're growing and you're aging and you're becoming more and more with each decade, instead of living in fear of it and in fear of aging and in fear of dying and becoming nothing. You know, I learned very early in life that you can look at life as your living life until you grow out of this life and into your next, or you can look at life as you're living and then you're dying and it's over. And, you know, I made my choice, and I see that choice that I made.
And because of that, other things were possible.
Yes, anything that seemed impossible becomes more possible and possible.
Mm. But then what, I mean, we come from a source, let's say, you know, we come from the pure spirit where we are all things, and even incarnating, we're still connected to that. I mean, what is the real purpose of being here in this three-dimensional plane if we're already that which we're becoming? Do you know what I'm saying?
I think every soul came here to complete itself and to fulfill a destiny. And there's an amazing story that I love to read whenever I'm doing it or have my students read in class. And it's the big soul, the big sun and the little soul.
No, what is that?
Neil Donald Walsh. Wrote a children's story that really talks about each soul comes here for a different reason, and we participate with that soul in negative and positive ways for them to have their experience that they needed here.
Right.
And it's an amazing story, and I think it really explains a lot of unexplainable relationships that you have with key people in your life that you don't understand why it doesn't seem to work, why you're always, you know, in conflict, and how difficult it is to resolve a conflict with this person you love so much. And then you see you're here for them to experience that conflict.
Because in that conflict, what do they learn?
You find yourself.
In the conflict, we find yourself.
Through that conflict, you find yourself. I used to think that, oh my God, these difficult people that are in my life, I can't wait to get away from them.
Right.
But then they're still with me. I'm away from them, and I'm thinking of them and obsessing about them, and they're like, they're ruining my life.
Right.
You know? And until I realized, No, I'm ruining my life because I haven't worked it out.
Right.
It's one of us has to decide that we're not going to win.
Win
there
what,
doesn't
anyway?
Have to be a winner.
A winner of the ego.
Of the
game.
Ego, of whatever thing you think, points you're trying to make.
Right.
I went through life making so many points that I was sleeping on a bed of points, you know, and it's like I don't want to make a point anymore. I want to lay on a soft bed with feathers, and I want to cuddle up in it, and whoever wants to come and cuddle with me, you know, let's do it. Let's cuddle up together and read stories and share and have a good time.
Well, you did find this deep love inside you that we all have.
Yes.
And you shifted out of from being that other person who
yes.
wanted that conflict. And I guess that happened, like the story around your father, where that shift happened. I mean, even though you were aware of other things, was that where that major transition happened, when you realized that it was through your love that you could give your father life, almost, in a sense?
Well, okay, I guess that's a perspective. For me,
yes.
what happened in my mind was that, look at this amazing connection I have with the Creator. And I was in awe of it.
Can you explain that? What do you mean?
Okay. During this time when my father was in the coma, I was reading Conversations with God.
Uh-huh.
And I just found them tremendously fulfilling because I was having my own dialogue every moment of gratefulness. I mean, with every little shift and change that my father went through, an improvement, I was feeling this incredible gratefulness, and I was feeling God's grace, and I was reveling in it, and I was feeling connected and just in love, And my children were very young and very precious, and every moment was just heightened by this experience.
Mm.
And then I started really, you know, asking and looking and needing way more than I ever had, and seeing my dreams come true. And seeing others' dreams come true. And, you know, that began miracle-mindedness for me.
And that's a nice thing to call it, miracle-mindedness.
Yes, and just reveling in miracles, and I still have them every day of my life.
Like what? Because I'm sure everybody does, but they're not recognizing them.
Like yes, well, now, I know that sometimes if a need be, you know, I can put my hands on someone and touch them with an energy. That's very exciting for me. And that energy can help them in a way, or by talking with someone I love and helping to open their hearts so that they can get through a difficult situation with grace.
Is it because something in you gets out of the way, do you feel? Or what happens to you inside you when you're in that space? Are you just loving that person?
Well, I'll give you an example of the most recent thing that happened to me that I was really so excited about. My daughter called me the other day in the morning, and she goes, "Mommy, my computer, I left my computer at school, and it's gone." She just started college, and she was in a small school before with just a few kids in her class, and now she's in college, and, you know, she's used to leaving things behind and being able to go back and retrieve them.
Right.
But here she is, big girl on campus, and
right.
new life, and she
right.
goes, "It's gone." And she's panicking, and she said, "Mommy, you know, it's you know, almost $2,000, and
right.
I, you know, And I, everything I,
of course, it's
everything
very upsetting.
Is on there. And she, and I had personal stuff on there. And
yeah.
Oh my God, somebody could, you know, she was going into this complete panic and meltdown. And I'm like, hold on a second. Let's just calm down. And I'm trying to calm down because I'm all upset for her too. You know, and I said, you know, the first thing to do is to ask for help. And she goes, what do you mean? I said, this is when something is bigger than you and you're overwhelmed and you're crying and you're upset. Breathe a minute and ask for God's help. And she goes, oh, Mom, you know, here you go with your whole thing. You know, I'm like, no, honey, just do it. And I say a prayer and just ask and also believe in humanity. Believe in the people in your class.
Believe that the good is out there.
Yeah, believe in the goodness of their hearts and that they're going to turn that in and that you'll be able to get it and see it coming back to you.
Yeah.
And believe in them. You're in class. These are people that you should know. You know, look into their faces
right.
You know, ask for their support and help.
So she did. She got out of that panic for a moment.
Yes.
And she asked.
I told her to go over to the school and go talk with the head of your department and see if you can put a notice up about it and where they could, who they can return it to. And, you know, she did, and it wasn't more than an hour and a half later. 2 hours later, she called me and she said, Mom, somebody brought my computer back.
Mm.
And,
well.
And you know, you've got to believe in your fellow man.
Right.
You know, when you believe in them, even on in an unconscious level, you are sending out that vibration, and they are getting it.
Right. If she would have gotten contracted and, you know, upset, and she probably would have had different results. Well, who knows, right?
Who knows? But, you know, because I live this and I practice it, I see it working all the time. And I love being able to calm down and share this information with others when they're panicking, when their souls are in that place. You know, I was listening to music with my son the other night,
mm-hmm.
This young group, and they scream at like the top of their lungs. And it's like very powerful.
Uh-huh.
And they're screaming at their rage and anger and, you know, saying every word that, you know,
right.
You can't say on the radio, but I'm listening and it's very exciting to me because it's like that primal scream where they're letting it all out, all the frustration, all the anger, all the unfairness. They're getting it out musically, and it's beautiful. It's powerful and beautiful, and it could be judged, you know, harshly by parents, you know, but I just thought, you know, our kids need to cry and scream and let it out, the frustration, the depth of their pain and suffering, and make something, do something creative with it. It's great when it comes out in music.
Mm-hmm.
It's great when it comes out at all. It's very brave to express that pain, and it's got to come out of everyone. We can't, you know, walk around just throwing flowers on each other when we're suffering.
Mm-hmm. So as a teacher, though, and you have students, I guess it's coaching them to be that open and accepting and loving. It's really all we have to do or be, which is our basic nature. Or is there something more? Because as you're talking, I'm getting it.
Okay. As a teacher, I will say to you that, you know, in order to love yourself, you've got to love everything that hurts you about yourself.
Everything that hurts you about yourself?
Everything that hurts you. Everything that you're keeping a secret that you've buried inside that is not acceptable to you or to others, that you've been condemned for or judged
Or judge yourself,
or
yeah.
Or judge yourself harshly for, and, you know, that you got to let it out, and you got to set it free. You got to press a reset button and have faith that you're not going to make those same mistakes anymore and move on.
Right.
You know, at some point, everybody's got to stop blaming themselves for the mistakes they made. This is life. This is not... We can't always make the perfect right choice. And we can't spend our lives blaming ourselves for the mistakes we've made.
Right, because it's such a waste of time.
It's such a waste of time and energy, and it's a waste of a beautiful life.
Right. I have a couple of people in New York I want you to work with. who I've been trying to tell that to, but I think somehow, I mean, you have more practice at it, and, you know, it's good to, you can't say it enough, you know.
Can't say it's for all of us.
Yeah.
There's nobody on this planet that hasn't suffered horribly in some way, and that it isn't pushed deep inside and it doesn't fester and grow and need, you know, a loving release. We all need to release some of that stuff. It's like, you know, cleaning house. We stuff our house full of things and things that we don't need that are cluttering our lives, and, you know, we clean them out, and then our house looks beautiful and feels good to us again. This is our house. This is where we dwell, and we've got to clean it out all the time.
This emotional abode.
Mm-hmm.
It's the emotions. It's the feelings that I think we've been afraid of. Feeling.
Yeah, we need to look at all those things we're afraid to look at.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
I mean, as we're evolving this culture and as we're going to another level, does suffering disappear, or is suffering a part of life?
Well, in my experience with suffering, I know that people who believe that they've done a lot of things wrong suffer a lot more than people who don't have that belief.
Right.
So people that are judging themselves harshly, believe in punishment, suffer a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I see that. And the ones that are willing to just forgive themselves and others, yeah, that's true.
I know that in my life, since I was a child, everybody always said I have a very high threshold for pain.
Physical pain.
Yeah, and I meet others who have a high threshold for pain. And I guess that's a medical term.
Uh-huh.
You know, but a spiritual term for that is... The truth is, we're just not feeling pain the way that others do. It's just not the same thing.
It's pain. It may feel the actual same, but the way we connect with that...
is different.
Yeah. Yeah. I see.
There's a certain grace in letting go of rage and anger.
Mm.
And that... transforms into you know, pain or the lack of pain.
Mm. Did you have rage and anger in your life?
Yes, of course.
Right.
Of course.
Okay, because, I mean, I don't know if of course I've been angry, but I don't know if maybe I'm not in touch with it, but I don't feel like there's ever been that much to really be angry about. I mean... I don't know, maybe I'm not in touch with it, but I feel like, is anything worth getting that angry about? Maybe.
Yeah, I think there are things worth getting angry about.
Right.
I see a lot.
But I guess when people hold on to the anger, then it comes up as a repressed rage is really the repression of the anger that then must be released at some point. Wouldn't you say?
It's a release, but it doesn't necessarily solve anything.
Right.
You know, that's the thing.
Yeah.
It releases, but it does come back. So You know, I started problem solving. You know, I was a firefighter in the Hamptons in New York for 8 years.
Oh, really?
And I guess because I had this rage about fire and the damage that it can do, and I don't know, I had this thing about fire.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to do something about fire.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to help people with fire. And I know that every time that my beeper went off and I went to respond to a call, and I would, you know, flying into my bunker gear and flying onto the truck, there would, my adrenaline would just be pumping, and
mm-hmm.
my breathing, and I'd be like intense every single time.
Uh-huh.
And that whatever lit up inside of me to get me to respond and react in the way that I had to under whatever circumstances we were working with was very powerful, and I loved it.
Right.
I loved it. And yes, there would be rage at times, you know, what I would see or what was happening, and you know, having some power to help the situation was just incredibly fulfilling.
Hmm. Wow. So now you're traveling around, though, giving these talks about loving yourselves, and what kind of world do you see as possible? I mean, what would you like the world to look like and be if you could create that?
Well,
I mean, the ideal.
I would love the world to be, you know, a giant think tank where everybody shared and found ways to improve the world, and were actively participating and making things happen for our world and for each other in the most positive of lights and sharing. I would like to see us all share. I don't feel like I am different from anyone. I could be any color. I love people of every color, and I don't see that we are any different.
It seems to all come down to consciousness. It seems as, from what I hear, it's like somehow you've gotten familiar with your own levels of awareness or consciousness, and then able to, like you said, with the channeling, with tapping into other beings. But it's a familiarity with your own, not just thoughts, but levels of awareness. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a depth in understanding or feeling yourself, which I think is part of our spiritual evolution.
And I think coming to a place where you trust yourself, mm-hmm. I can actually say that today I trust me.
Mm.
And
what does that mean? You trust your feelings, your...
Yeah, I trust that what I'm doing, you know, that I am consciously aware. And there was a time in my life where I was in a fog, and I was just responding. I wasn't creating my life. Life was happening, and it was happening all around me, but, you know, I was clueless.
Mm.
In how to get out of difficult situations. I was drowning.
Right.
And yet I was living in a beautiful home with beautiful children, beautiful husband, and, you know, had everything. But my consciousness, I had a lot of calcium deposits in my brain. And whenever those were dissolved, I had my great awakening.
Was it because you were afraid to feel what you're saying we need to feel? Was that the deposits there? Was that the numbness, that the unwillingness to feel?
Yeah, I think that when we feel and we leave ourselves raw and open, if we don't have compassion and true love for others and ourselves, we can get very hurt. Because our egos just tell us, protect yourself, attack. Hurt them before they hurt you, or run away from them and never experience them so you don't get hurt. You know, like the ego does all of this chatter that is just so destructive that you never connect.
Right.
And so, you know, how do you start really feeling and enjoying and loving? Disconnect from that part of yourself and really see the people that are beside you.
Mm. You say disconnect from that part of ourselves, but most people think that that part is themselves.
Oh, yeah. But I can say that that part of myself protected me from really communicating and really having love affairs with others. So it's a false sense of self, and you can never truly connect with another human being when you're operating in that mind frame.
Right, but you had an awareness that it wasn't you. Most people are so caught up in it that, you know, it takes something to shake them up and see that those thoughts of separateness are the illusion of the ego. You know, I mean, I guess that's how do you shake people, or how do you get people?
Oh, well, life does it. Midlife does it to everybody. You have your midlife crisis, and that is your wake-up call.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't find yourself at your midlife time, it's a rites of passage. If you don't experience it, then you'll have a health issue or something, because your soul is going to be diseased. You're not going to have any ease in your life, and so you will manifest a big problem.
So that ego then is the dis-ease, the ego's separation from its true nature is that. So I always think
the ego is your wake-up call.
Or the ego's distress.
Yes.
Yeah. But don't you find it's always amazing that there's that purity of self that lives in each person that knows when it's off?
Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing in my workshops that I just, it's incredible to see when people first come in and start the workshop, and then when it's over, there's a process that the soul goes through. And it's so exciting for me to participate in that, because I see that innocent, beautiful soul come out.
Right. You saw it in there, in the beginning.
You see it in the beginning, but you really become friends with it. And that's what's a beautiful thing. Now, each person, whether I've had a workshop or we've done a healing session, you know, the joy that I get to experience with them is through this transformation is just a gift that's beyond. And I feel like I fall in love with everybody. It's amazing. And each soul touches my soul in an incredible way. It's a gift.
Sounds beautiful. It sounds great. And then those people then realize they could live from that place if they choose.
If you choose. You know, it's a choice, because sometimes the soul, you know, everybody takes what they need from an experience. I mean, I don't believe that everybody that participates in my workshop or anybody else's workshop has to be transformed forever or get on that program. I mean, I think that we all have this incredible opportunity to take from any experience what we really need, what we want, and you let go of the rest, and you bring in what really worked for you,
mm-hmm.
and let that cook with your life.
Right.
You know, become one of the beautiful ingredients that, you know, is in your recipe for your life.
Mm.
And I really see that as a very important part of sharing, is that just never feeling like, oh, anybody has to take everything you say at face value. If they only take one word or a sentence and get some benefit from it, that's a blessing.
It is, but also the other part of the blessing is that then once they shift that vibration and live in that new place, they bring it back out into the world that then shifts the world.
Yes, and that can happen if you choose that.
Yeah.
That's just...
Well, I think it does happen. If everyone who wakes up or to new parts of themselves wakes up people on some level with who they are in touch with.
Right. The most important thing that I will always say is never judge anyone to the extent of their waking up, because, you know, we are all here to experience something unique.
Wait, say that part again. Never judge anyone.
Anybody else's, you know, to the degree where they wake up to anything. You know,
right.
It's not for us to decide that this whole world needs to wake up and change and be just like us. You know, no. No, really, the beautiful thing is everybody is playing their part in their unique way.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and if we judge and want and demand, that prevents anybody from really wanting to make that shift.
Well, that's what I love about doing this program and talking to people and kind of tracking the progress of awakening, because everyone is awakening and at their own pace to deeper parts of themselves, and it's to acknowledge the awakening each person is doing without comparing them to anybody else.
Right.
But that's really exciting for me, because I don't judge, I don't think. I mean, I'm just very happy with each person's progress, and that's why I do this program, because it's to share this whole fabric or tapestry of awakening in all its different forms.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's exciting to see it unfold, and I think, you know, a lot of people are doing that now. They're just very happy and excited about progress that's happening on an individual level.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I see.
I see it and feel it also.
You do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're building to something great. Something that I don't know if we could imagine at this point, but I think a great awakening, planetary awakening, is happening that will pull us all to a new level of realization.
We're already surprising ourselves and each other.
Mm-hmm. Just with the internet, it's a surprise, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Just that the knowledge of the world is at our fingertips.
Mm-hmm.
Really, right at our fingertips. And that's something I don't think we could have imagined. But I think on this other level, this emotional capacity and the capacity to understand consciousness, we're moving towards great things as well. It seems like that.
It feels like it. There were times when I used to speak and to people, and they could only go so far with the kind of thoughts that you and I are sharing.
Mm.
But now people just keep asking for more.
Uh-huh.
It's really interesting. I could be on the phone all day long with people talking about the things that you and I are talking about now. And that just is very thrilling to me. I know that this is the right time and the right place, and all we need to do is have more opportunities to share.
Well, so you do phone sessions with people?
Yes, I do.
Is there a number people can reach you at? Or do you want them to email you?
I'd like them to email me.
Okay, what's your email?
It's Earthy, E-A-R-T-H-E.
E-A-R-T-H-E.
At Bell South.
At BillSouth.net.
.net.
And do you have a website?
Yes, I have the Tent Project.
What is that? That's a whole other conversation.
But if you want to go, look on it.
Okay, the Tent Project.
.org.
But what is it? A little brief thing.
Okay. I have a lot of friends that are healers. And I like to work with them. Yi Cheng and I work together, and sometimes we bring their healers with us, and we go and do a healing experience. And so the Tent is all about being able to travel to different parts of the world and bring extraordinary groups of people together to help change and support areas and people who are in need.
That is exciting. So it's on your website, the whole...
The whole thing is on my website, and please take a look at it and let me know what you think.
So you're coming to New York October 17th to the 21st?
Yes.
And then people can contact you there to find out more, or Yi Cheng. What, can you give Yi Cheng Lee's number again?
Yes. I have it somewhere.
But also, are you going to be going to other cities and doing this work?
Yes, I will. I don't have my schedule right in front of me.
Where do you usually go? What cities, in case people are listening? Do you go to Boston or Los Angeles or?
No, I haven't gone to Boston. I haven't done that yet. Just New York has been where I have been traveling to.
Right. And we almost met in Martha's Vineyard this year.
And Martha's Vineyard has been there. Not too many places. This is the beginning of my journey.
And
I love New York. I'm from New York. And it's always very exciting to come back home.
You sound so young, I have to say. I don't know how old you are, but you sound really young. You sound like, you know, you're in your 20s or something like that.
Oh, that's just my heart.
You do. Maybe you are. You're youthing. All the love can only make you feel young, right?
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Right. So,
and I don't think I've ever grown up, really.
That's a good thing. But if people want to contact you in New York, I got Yi Cheng Lee's number. This is how you find out. It's 212-671-0979. And you'll be speaking at the East West Bookstore one of those days.
Yes, right? I think it's the 21st. Yi Cheng has all the information.
Great. And we'll do a television show interview as well.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah.
I can't wait to meet you in person.
Oh, yeah, we'll have fun. We'll have a lot. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I appreciate everything you're doing, because it feels like a part of me doing that.
I really love what you're doing. I think it's the best gift you can give.
Well, I'm doing it because I'm excited by it.
Yeah.
And
I hear it in your heart. It comes through loud and clear.
Thank you. And it's nice to feel your humanness as well, and to feel, you know, like you're not beyond it. You're still very humble, and you know. And I think that just it keeps us growing and growing, the humbleness. So thank you, Joan.
God bless. Thank you so much.
I'm going to play a song called The Song of the Soul. That's how I like to end this program. Do you know that song by Chris Williamson? But I'll just tell people I'm Alan Steinfeld for New Realities, and you can hear me every week on bbsradio.com. And I welcome comments at newrealities@earthlink.net. And you can also check my website, which is newrealities.tv, and a new website coming, which is newrealities.com. And that'll be coordinating a lot of events in New York, a lot of the things we've been talking about. So, okay, Joan, I will say goodbye, but listen for this song, because I think you'll like it if it comes through the speaker.